Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. Well, it's called Talking Pictures with Paul Booth, so of course I'm your host. Still trying to get used to that. But anyways, welcome to our fifth episode of Female Filmmaker Friday, which started out as a photo movement on Facebook. And myself and a few of the producers thought, well, we want to contribute, but we obviously don't have pictures of ourselves as women directing. So I thought, you know what, let's do a Female Filmmaker Friday podcast. And a good friend of ours, who was our first guest, set us up with some guests, and then we just kind of put word out, and it has been amazing and so awesome. It was LA, we had a New York guest, a guest from Atlanta, a guest from San Francisco, all kinds of cool stuff. So today we're actually going to be joined by, and I'll bring her in just one second. Today we're actually going to be joined by Madison Campione, and she had the good fortune, which we'll get into talking to her about, of being able to make a short before she went to film school, and also being able to, now she attends USC Film School, so she kind of got to enjoy playing the festival circuit, being blessed with some awards and nominations, and so yeah, are you with us, Maddie, or Madison?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, hi. Excellent. Now, I know when we talk, I say Maddie and stuff, so what do you prefer on air?
I don't mind. Maddie works for me.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure. So, welcome, and thank you for doing this. Again, Maddie has been on. She helped give us her perspective being at the Cannes Film Festival, which was so helpful because it gave us some insight and some reviews and some discussion. And then now Maddie is attending the USC Film School, School of Cinematic Arts, which, as everyone knows, whether you're in the business or not, is a huge honor. So Maddie, first thing I wanted to say was congratulations on that last film of yours. That was a really, really fantastic film. So
thank you.
And by any chance, I know it wasn't like, I'm sure it's private, and of course I know it's owned by USC, but is there a way people can see that on Vimeo, or is that just, it just stuck kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, is there a way people can watch it?
So yeah, it is under a password protected link. So they would have to reach out to me, and then I can give them the link. I mean, the link and the password, yeah.
Okay, cool. So what I'll do is I'll just, you know, I'll mention it to a few people. And if you'd like to meet some directors, that's cool. And if not, that's cool too. But Maddie made this wonderful short film, which, again, for new listeners, I do not tell the guests one thing they want to hear. So if I say that I liked what Maddie did, I'm not doing it to toot Maddie's horn or feed her ego, or which she doesn't have one. So, Maddie, because we're trying to establish with this series, this is the last thing, and I have a question for you. We like to be able to say, because we've had coast to coast guests, are you okay with me, saying where you're from? So then people know
sure.
How this is. Okay. Yeah. So, go ahead and let us know where you're from.
So I'm from San Jose, California, and yeah, so the Bay Area.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, because we had San Francisco, LA, New York, and our last guest was Atlanta. So I'm really wanting to spread this across women of all ages, experience. You're our first student guest. Our last guest directs, produces, writes television for Turner Classic Movies. She just had a feature-length documentary come out. Yeah, so it was really cool because she loves women filmmakers and she loves students. So I planned that purposely for it to be like, you know, a television director was on and then a student. Now, Maddie, my first question for you is, Because I don't have a bio here in the press kit. It just says director's statement. Oh, no, wait, here it is. I'll read this briefly about Maddie. She will be the graduating class of 2019. She's a very passionate writer and a good one. Director, she's okay at that. No, just kidding. She's been writing stories, making short films since she was 10 under the mentorship of her father. Oh, it's so weird. I'm used to calling him Troy, but it says Dr. Troy Campione. I'm sorry, but this is also to profile the filmmaker. So if you don't mind me asking, your dad's like he's like an MD at a hospital?
No, he isn't. He has his doctorate actually in chemical engineering.
Oh, wow. Harder than a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, so before he became a filmmaker, he was in that field, yeah.
Okay, so aside from just saying I like the way Troy uses his camera, Troy could potentially stop a nuclear power plant. Okay, kudos and thank you for that, Troy. That's good to know, you know, because as you know, and with me meeting your dad, we just hit it off talking, so it's never about call me doctor or, you know, anything, so... So Maddie, obviously, you can see, comes from an intelligent background, and let's see, her father's also a filmmaker. She's currently, as I said, a major at USC. She enjoys the challenge and excitement of bringing her creation to life. You can also find her name on the Internet Movie Database for her short film Remembrance. And now we will get into the first question. Which, how has directing a short, other than you're under school supervision and it's their equipment, the process of directing a short, how was it going from Remembrance to the structure of film school?
It was definitely a lot more structured, because when my dad and I were working on Remembrance, we were kind of making it up as we went along. We didn't really have a set procedure, but in film school, there is, there's a time allotment for scripts and script revisions and, you know, pre-production and a lot of different deadlines. And then you're also, at least in my program, you're put in a trio with two other student filmmakers. And you work together, each of you in different roles. So for my film, I was writer-director. And then my other trio mates were producing / sound and cinematography and editing. So we all had our own specific roles. And we would rotate through the roles. And we made three short films this semester. So I only made one film that I wrote and directed, but then I got the opportunity to produce and work on sound design and cinematography and edit for other films. So it was from what I've learned, one of the major things I've learned so far is all the collaboration that goes into filmmaking, especially when we're put in a trio, because we're constantly bouncing ideas off of each other. And also the structure of film school is very different, with the deadlines and such. And we get a lot of feedback from our professors as well.
Right. Because I remember film school, the deadlines and for our main films, we did a doc that you got split up and did. It's a crew of five or six. And then we did two thesis films to where it couldn't be the same director. They picked six different scripts. So then no one could have written two of the films. And then you got crewed up on those. So there was a little bit of at my school frustration where, not for me, where guys were like, I didn't come here just to have been a camera operator and a boom man and I came here to just to direct. And it's kind of like, as you've learned now, like you're saying, that directing is not just sitting in a chair calling action. The great directors know sound design. They know what the boom man is putting up with. They know what the cinematographer is going through. And that's why the team works well, as opposed to a director who thinks they're above learning sound design. Now, of those things that you just said you got to do differently, which one was your favorite of the, like, cinematography, sound design, all that?
My favorite. I would say it's a pretty close editing. I've always loved editing, so I'd say that was my number one. But I definitely enjoyed sound design more than I expected. We actually just finished up our sound design today for our final film of the semester. So that was very interesting because it provides a whole new dimension to a film because you have the visual, you know, edit, and then the sound edit is just like a completely different film basically married with the picture. So I learned so much about how important sound is through doing that role. And then also just the edit. I've always just enjoyed the visual storytelling aspect of editing and with pace and rhythm and everything like that and continuity. So I've enjoyed that.
Now, how do you, this kind of goes back to structure and again, I say this not in an arrogant way for new listeners. We have audience out there that does not know the lingo or the business side. So sometimes when I say something that's very simple, I'm not condescending. The idea that people are always forgetting, I remember in film school, I put my time into sound, mixing, boom man, sound editing. People really do, and I don't know if you've found this yet, Maddie, that when you talk to people, they really forget that half the movie is sound. That, you know, silent films are fun, but it's because there wasn't sound. So that whole fix it in post, or it's no big deal that a plane flew by, but, you know, oh, if we're framing up a shot of your house and a plane flies by, then it's, you know, screwed up. So I'm glad that you're getting to see those other aspects. Now, liking editing, sound editing, now we'll kind of talk a little bit about the short that you directed. And again, this is for people out there, this is about process. Sometimes people email me and they're like, why did you have a guest on of a film I can't see? And it's like, because this show is also to educate and hear what the director's doing. So trust me, if I had Maddie's film and her permission, I would send it out to everybody on the planet. So in learning to adapt to the structure, how was it as a director that once you lock picture, it's locked, and once you lock sound, it's locked, as opposed to, like you said, you and Troy could maybe go back and tweak 2 seconds. What was it like to deal with picture lock?
Picture lock. I think, especially for my film In Our Heads, which was the student film I worked on this semester, a huge part of it was sound design. So once the picture was locked, there is an entirely new dimension in which I had to work on. So I think after sound lock was the biggest realization for me, is when it all kind of came together and became one cohesive piece. Because the visuals, though they were like, you know, they do tell the story. So much of the story of In Our Heads is told through voiceover. Because basically it's a film about two college students that meet at a party, and you can hear both of their thoughts. So that was a huge part of, you know, both the narrative structure and, you know, marrying it with the visuals. So that really made the film come together for me. So after sound lock, it was locked for me, and I think it came together well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's interesting the way you explained that, because what I know I can do is make a suggestion for anyone listening. Maddie, if you have your fellow students listen, there was a movie over Christmas called Molly's Game, and it was very heavy voiceover, and written by Aaron Sorkin, who did The West Wing and Newsroom. He is the Jedi master of dialogue. And I was thinking when I saw this advanced screening, how did the cinematographer possibly plan what to shoot when it's voiceover and you don't know if the voiceover is going to come on a medium shot of Maddie or a long shot of me? And so this cinematographer, her name's Charlotte Christensen. She also shot Denzel Washington's Fences. I suggest that you guys check out Molly's game because, my interview with her, this is show maintenance. Sorry, Maddie. www.talkingpicturesla.com. Go in the archives. She breaks down how she worked with this rapid fire dialogue and how to work with the visuals and adapt to it, not even knowing herself where the voiceover would come. So it was really a riddle, and she breaks it down. So if you guys want to go in our archives, it's about 5 or 6 interviews back. Incredibly ambitious technique. That's what I liked about your film, Maddie, was I had recently covered Molly's game and then heard from the cinematographer how they did it. So now I have one other question for you. This kind of goes back to some films that you've seen, and it applies to your film. Did you ever see the Woody Allen movie Annie Hall that was the 1977 Best Picture?
No, I didn't actually.
Okay.
I should.
Okay,
say,
so yeah, so that's what I really liked. I'm glad that you said no, because here's what's interesting. There's a very famous scene where he's met Diane Keaton. They're getting to know each other as like a, not a date. They just ran into each other and they're talking. And when there's those uncomfortable silences, he had subtitles of what they were thinking.
Oh,
and so,
okay. Huh.
Yeah. So, and it was landmark at the time because it was like, we're standing there, we stop talking. And then it says, oh, she probably thinks I'm such an idiot. And then it's the girl's part, oh my gosh, I'm making such a fool of myself. And so I love that you didn't see that film because I had thought, which is fine, we all borrow from filmmakers. I had thought maybe, wow, she took this and was going to do it without the subtitles. So the fact that you didn't even see that film makes it even more awesome what you did. Now, I won't ask personally if you related to that story because it felt personal. So I will go to your writing and directing. Do you have any specific writing rituals in terms of like some people will meditate, some people will go for a jog? What kind of space do you have to be in to be a writer for you?
For me, I usually write late at night because sometimes, honestly, like I'll wake up in the middle of the night and just get a flash of inspiration. So usually I'll just pull out my phone, say it's like 3 a.m. and I'll type up an idea that I had on like the notes on my phone. And then the next day I'll reread it and revisit it. And then if I decide it's a good idea to spring off of, I can go off of that. But yeah, I usually, let's see. I like to write in coffee shops a lot, or just in my room, just in like comfortable spaces. And yeah, usually I get those bursts of inspiration at night.
That's really interesting. You are an official filmmaker because filmmakers need to get used to insomnia and they need to get used to having that. Like, that's what was so tough. So many people didn't understand, when I was doing a lot more producing. And of course I love working with Troy on the stuff that we're doing. But they didn't understand why I would be up from 3 to 5 and then go to bed at 7. And it was like, because I think, and you've probably learned this, we won't talk about your living situation, but for me, it was like the phone doesn't ring. Your cell phone doesn't mm-hmm. ring. Nobody can ask you to run errands. Your day job is closed, so you can really hone in on what you're trying to do. So really take advantage of this now before it becomes where you only get your writing time at 7 p.m. or, you know, so this is that's a cool thing that you get to dedicate, have the nighttime stuff. My next question, and again, I don't know if you remember from the last time we did the episode, that I purposely jump around. So I want you to know that I'm not like ill-prepared or just jumping around. We love to kind of just have a conversation here. So for USC Film School, and again, anything Maddie says or I say is just our opinions. She's not speaking on behalf of USC. She's not speaking on behalf of anybody but her. So for me, I would love to know, what is the biggest myth or I don't know, I'm trying to think what the other word is. USC has that feel of, the analogy would be that it's a big bad lion that's going to bite you. Even, I mean, it's a great school. So I'm trying to say, like, when you, once you started going there, you realized that it's just a cat. So kind of like, was there any myths that you had that quickly went away, or, you know, surprises where you thought, oh, I thought it was going to be this, but it's this?
I'm trying to think of myths that I had going in. I mean, obviously the first thing that struck me was the selectivity of it. So I was beyond myself when I found out that I had been accepted into the program, especially the film production program. It's a very, very selective, small group of people. Like, I rotate classes with, I don't think there's maybe like 50 or so people in my total class. And then we get divided into four smaller classes. And you take classes with these same people all the time. So I think what really surprised me is, like, I knew it was selective, but I didn't realize how much of a community it would be, and how small of groups it would be, and how connected you would be to your professors and to your fellow students. Because, yeah, I didn't really know what to expect going in. I knew that there was going to be about 50 or so of us in my class, but I didn't realize the extent of the close quarters and the collaboration. Like, we're always down in the basement together editing in the studios, and you know, we're working almost all the time. It's an incredibly intensive program, especially the class that I was in this semester. It's called 310. It's our junior thesis. They tell us not to call it our junior thesis, but it basically is. It's the three films that we made this semester, and it's a very intensive program. And I knew it was intensive going in, but I didn't know how much support I would receive and how much just like collaboration would be present there, and the family that's there, because I think that there is a, like, that it is a big, scary school, and that people aren't there to support you. But in reality, like, the professors are always there to be called or texted or emailed, and we're all on a first name basis. It's like a very, very close community at the school.
Well, that's fantastic, because it does have the myth of being a little bit more competitive, and obviously it is, but, you know, you strike me as a filmmaker, and I believe we talked about this before, where you're doing it because you love it. You're not doing it to cut my head off and rejoice in how you're a better filmmaker, and that's important, you know, for people out there. Film school has become such a touchy thing, because now we get people saying, well, you don't even have to go to film school, but it's like, you know what? Guess what? You do have to go to film school, because if you go out and make your own film, you're not going to learn other crew positions, which gives you respect for what they do and how hard they work. And you're not going to, how you said, that close-knit of people. I'd bet you $1,000 right now that in 10 years, you're going to be doing something with someone that you met in class. And that is what is the most invaluable thing about film school, that networking that you just don't get if you try to just go out in the world. I mean, I graduated film school 18 years ago, and I have a phone meeting later today about something I'm working on with a classmate. So that's what I really want people to take from this series, and especially since we have a USC student. I know you explained the groups and the breaking off, but as far as working with a crew and the schedules and stuff, was there something as a director that you learned more that you know you would not have learned that as a director if you didn't have more of a crew and the deadlines? And I don't just mean work harder and faster. I mean something like you were like, oh, now this is in my director's toolbox, and it came from working on this film.
I think, I mean, there's so much that I learned. I'm just trying to narrow it down. I think that when I was directing Remembrance, there did seem to be a bubble for me, like the director's bubble. Like I was focused only on directing and I didn't really know or understand that much of the other roles. So there was less collaboration there, I would say. I was focused mostly on the actors, and just like story and stuff like that. But with directing with a, you know, in a trio where we're all constantly in communication and working together, like I think what I took out of that is how much directing is dependent on the other roles. Like directing isn't its own little bubble and it shouldn't be, because if you're only focused on, you know, I'm going to be a great director and, you know, I'm going to direct my actors and this is all I'm going to do and everyone else, it doesn't matter. But a large part of directing is working with the people around you and the crew and seeing the bigger picture and understanding that everyone has their own needs on set, and you just have to be a good listener and be empathetic. And I think, yeah, working in the different roles, I became more empathetic to like what everyone else is going through. So when it came my turn to direct, I realized that filmmaking is such a collaborative process and I need to be in constant communication and with everyone else.
Well, you know, I'm really happy that that's what you took from it, because again, that would be a rare answer with some people. And I know in film school, of course, now that it's 18 years later, people that I did not talk to, hang out with, anything in film school, now, you know, we talk and support each other, because in film school, it's just you're younger and egos are flying. And but that communication and being able to share and to know that there's a bigger purpose than you is something that I really suggest, and I know you will, but I definitely hope and suggest you will, to take that with you, even to if it's $100 million and you have your favorite actor, actress, because I can tell you from myself being crew on major studio films, one that was even nominated for a Best Picture, that it does not matter what the project is, if the director does not set a fun, non-egotistical, good tone, the experience will be horrible. Doesn't matter how great the film is, or they get to say, Maddie introduced me to Pacino. If people are unhappy and it's because you're not willing to, you know, be nice yourself. And the film I was on was a very, very well-known A-list Oscar-winning director. And, you know, by the second or third day, he was saying hi to me by first name. He knew everyone's name on that crew. So aspire to that, and please tell your fellow students to, you know, that goes so far in film and on a set. So let's see, we got crew, directing, film school. Now we'll do a little bit of a reverse question. The position that you liked, was there a position you had to do and learn that you didn't enjoy?
That I didn't enjoy. I think one of the aspects of USC is that there are a lot of paperwork and a lot of rules that you have to follow and a lot of forms you have to sign and get signed by many, many people. So I'd say my least favorite was probably the line producing aspect. It was a little bit stressful for me and it tended not to be very creative, because I was just making phone calls to locations and trying to schedule different meetings and everything like that. So like the very logistical paperwork side of it, I'd say was my least favorite, though. I mean, I did learn a lot and I appreciate it. And I definitely have huge respect for line producers. I just think that personally just wasn't for me. But yeah, it was an okay experience.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, a line producer will save your production. I mean, people need to know
that. Sure.
They're so key. I'm bummed that they don't usually get front end movie credits except on indie films. Again, show maintenance, www.talkingpicturesla.com. We're based in Southern California, but we do cover festivals in other states through screeners and through reporters that attend. I was just checking the stats this morning. We do have listens, and I've known this, but I was checking the new ones. We have listeners all over the world. I'd have to count how many continents we're on, but I think it's 5 of 7. Also, since we're talking female here, Maddie, the group of listeners is at 50-50. So we even have an equal amount of people who are paying attention. And so if you have anything to say, how do you feel about, even though you're a student and so you haven't PA'd studio shows and you haven't done features, and that's not a bad thing, it's just to frame the question. What is it like right now that you are going into a world where all you're hearing about now is how women have a disadvantage? How is that affecting your process as a filmmaker?
Personally, my dad is he's been incredibly supportive of me throughout my starts of my career, you know, and there's never been a sense that because I'm a woman, I can't become a filmmaker, at least in my family. That was never something that we thought or believed or anything like that. And then coming into USC, hasn't been any hindrance of being a woman filmmaker. But I do, you know, hear in the news and about the workplace and how women are having a difficult time becoming, you know, top directors in the film industry. But I think that we are making, or, you know, females are making a giant leaps in the industry. It seems like it actually might be a good time to enter because there's so many movements of women that, you know, believe that it's time for us to just have, you know, equal pay and equal treatment and equal ability to become great, to excel in our craft as much as a man could. So for me personally, in my personal life, I haven't had any troubles. Being a woman filmmaker hasn't hindered me in any way, but I know that there might be instances in the future where I'll have to fight up against that unfair treatment. But I'm actually kind of excited to go into the industry at this point because I think that we're more empowered than ever.
Right. Yeah, no, that's what part of this series was, is we've had some conversations with filmmakers that are in their late 30s or 40s. And, you know, I'm the same way like you. If I was to make a list of my most powerful connections, there'd be more women. If I was to make it about money, my female friends make more money than my male filmmaker friends. They've worked and ran sets of bigger known directors than any of my friends have ran films. So I've been on the complete opposite side of the coin. And plus, I just see us all as humans. And also, we're all half man and half woman. So the debate and the news, you know, leaves out and, like, you know, the deal, they like to spin it. And but yeah, of course, right now, I guess, how do you feel? Like you said, you didn't face it. You were obviously taught people are equal. But how do you feel about there's this movement and fight for equality, but then there's festivals that say we'll only take women's films. There's grants that are only for women. How does that make you, what does that make you think as a woman where you're saying we have to be equal, but it's okay if we're given something because we're a woman? Just has a point to explore, not, you know, go ahead. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, it's okay. I think that personally, it's a little off-putting when there are special awards and special programs specifically for women, which implies that we need this special treatment in order to become equal, because it's not like there's special programs for men on the – that would make it equal, I think. But I think
right.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I I like understand why a lot of authors, you know, they would put their names, you know, like J.K. Rowling, you know what I mean? Like names that are a little bit more gender neutral, because there is this, there's this aspect where it's like, if you're a woman, then you automatically are put in this box as a filmmaker or just as a person. And I kind of, what I hope is that someone would be like, oh, you know, that woman director over there, I mean, that director over there is great. She's a great director, but you don't have to say she's a great woman director, and have to emphasize that and put us in a category, because I think, yeah, we are all people and we can all contribute artistically. So I think if it's truly, you know, truly equal, we won't have to make that a huge statement. We can just say, yeah, like, oh yeah, she's a great director, he's a great director. And there's just that, that equality there.
Right. No, I appreciate that, because that's so, for men, I've just heard comments, heard people speaking, I don't go near having an opinion with a 100-foot pole because I'm a host and I have to remain neutral. And I'm obviously for equality, and I'm obviously for equal pay, and I'm on, you know, all of that. I just had that real weird coming up through the business. And I mean, even like with the last guest, I counted, we've had the last 34 interviews, 30 of them have been women. And I didn't consciously choose that, but I just thought, we can't say there's no places where there's equality. Because even though I'm just a podcast that, you know, Steven Spielberg hasn't heard of, doesn't mean that there's not those of us out there that want equality or are working towards it. And I think as long as we say we're never given equality, then that's just going to continue and be perpetuated. I'm not talking religious or spiritually, but I do believe you get what you think about. I do believe you get what energy you put out. You know, I don't think we've ever met, but the first time I talked to you on the phone, I remember thinking, I felt Madison in remembrance, that it was no shock to me that she was mellow, cool, could get to the point. And of course, I totally just love your dad. He's such a great guy and he's so wonderful to talk to. You know, the equality thing, sadly, is turning some guys into, well, you know, you asked me to fund your film and then you're telling me I can't come on set. So it is kind of a weird big can of worms, you know, because I mean, that's a good quick question. Then we'll get back into school stuff. I mean, yeah. So imagine you were that, Maddie. Imagine you asked me for 100K and I said yes. What would you remotely think I'm supposed to say if you were to tell me, oh, men aren't allowed on set, but I gave you 100 grand. I mean, is that just, your brain can't even wrap around something like that? Or do you have would you have any thoughts on that?
Personally would not say that you could not be on set. I think that that's unfair. Also, I don't think I will get to a point in my career where I'm just saying, just women on my set, no men. I don't have any problem with men. I have brothers. I've worked with my dad most of my life. Like,
I
don't have an issue.
And you have I see on Facebook, and I'm not going to mention names or anything, but one of your brothers is a hockey player, right?
Yeah, he's 14, but he's he does
play. Well, it's cool. I mean, I know I see it through the proud dad eyes, but that's what I like about, you know, seeing that. So my next question is, oh, let's see, your dad just emailed and said he tuned in briefly. So I guess that's a hello to you.
Hello.
Hey dad, even though you can't hear us. Hello. I have never wanted to live in San Jose. My grandmother and grandfather worked and lived in Palo Alto and Sunnyvale, and my grandpa worked across the street from Great America, the roller coaster park. So I used to go to that area a lot as a kid. I just never wanted to live there. But after CineQuest, and I met Sean and Elizabeth and Troy and Elizabeth Davies, which, oh, of course, you know, you guys were in that video together. I was just like, I know she's, well, I won't say where she is. She's just not in San Jose. I just kind of was like, man, I wish I could fly up here once or twice a week and, you know, do more with Troy or work more with Sean McCarthy. San Jose has this really great little microcosm of just fantastic filmmakers. They know they're competing with San Francisco, and you can't really compare the two. But they're just doing their thing. So I want to let audience know to Doucheholics is from San Jose Filmmakers. It's a web series. It's on iTunes and Amazon now. We're doing a series with them. Again, sorry, Maddie's show maintenance. And so check that out, Doucheholics, San Jose-based writers, producers, directors. And then, of course, Maddie's dad, Troy's company, is based there. So this was kind of what we wanted the show to do, was kind of open people's eyes so that there's more than L.A. and New York, and or if you get to go to Europe. As we wrap up, and again, has a, on a student schedule, we are double thankful for your time. Let's see, sorry, the window closed. What is your budget's there, story's there, so none of the logistics have to be handled. What is a genre that you just have to direct before you quit, or say a doctor said you could only direct one more film? Which one do you have to say, Maddie directed this genre?
Well, I'm currently working on a science fiction film, so I'll say science fiction. I think that okay. That would be, I mean, Remembrance had some science fiction elements, I think, but I'm planning on playing with the concept of parallel universes. So that's something that's been on my mind a lot and for my next film. And I think it's the right next step to explore because I mean, Remembrance was a thriller with some sci-fi, and then In Our Heads was a romantic dramedy. So I think like a full-on like sci-fi with probably some dramatic or romantic elements is my next step.
Okay. Well, you know, what's interesting is 90% of the cinematographers I've interviewed, which this is just so people know, go in the archives and learn. Now we're at the point where, I mean, you learn from the indies, so check those out. But these are names of films that you will definitely have heard of. And if you want to learn more about cinematography or some breakdown, we had the cinematographer of Get Out on. We had the cinematographer, as I said, of Molly's Game. We had the cinematographer of Mudbound, Rachel Morrison, who, of course, was the first Oscar nominee for cinematography. We had Rodney Taylor, who shot a whole season of Ballers on HBO. We had Paul Cameron, the cinematographer of Collateral and Westworld, for his Liam Neeson film, The Commuter. So please go back into these things because you will get a total breakdown of Get Out. So if you like Get Out, take a listen to that show. Little easier to find if you just Google Talking Pictures with Paul Booth and Get Out, but wonderful thing. Now the last question for you, Maddie, is what is a genre that doesn't matter if you're a struggling artist, you haven't eaten in a week, you have one bottle of water, and there's no way you're directing this drama, or this, there's no way there's no way you would ever direct this genre.
A genre that I would never direct.
Yeah, no matter how bad off you were, you haven't eaten, you haven't had water, but you're totally turned off by that genre and there's no way you're going to direct it.
I wouldn't say there's one genre that I would never consider doing, but I do have a least favorite genre. And I'd say it's Westerns. I don't see myself directing a Western.
Okay,
I don't hate it. Maybe. Maybe I would try one day.
Well, you know, no, that's a great thing because that gives me one question here to splinter off of the tree. the Western is something that even for my generation is, and I'm 20 years older than Maddie, so I'm not talking down to her, but that was more of something that was huge for like my dad and my grandfather. So I watched, I've seen all the essential Westerns where like Spielberg's like, I stole this for Jaws from this Western, or Martin Scorsese, like this scene inspired this movie. Well, just, I want to throw this out there to everyone. There's a film called The Searchers, 1956, directed by John Ford. And I swear to you, the first half hour is Star Wars Episode 4, the first Star Wars ever. And George Lucas will say, I copied The Searchers. And so please, The Searchers, look it up. You don't have to worry if you have a black and white issue with the color. It's an amazing Western. Talk about cinematography. But you watch it and you're just like, oh my God, this is Star Wars. So 20 years before, someone else was creating what we thought George Lucas made up. And so that's what I kind of like about old films. But yes, Westerns, they are tough. They are, you have to be a fan. And I think since they've kind of been, not dead, but they've been gone for so long, is why I think more and more they're liked or revered, because they just seem to pop up all of a sudden, and then it's like, okay, well, that had Christian Bale, Hostiles, and now we're not going to see a Western for 5 years. So it definitely is a generational thing. But if you can remember The Searchers, ask any of your professors, they will know what it is. They will, they probably have a print of it at your school because George Lucas reveres it so much. And the thing I want to wrap up with is, since you're a USC film school student, and tell your friends, whoever has Prime, you guys need to get a party together and you need to watch a documentary called Milius, M-I-L-I-U-S. As you know, very famous graduate of USC, but it totally breaks down when USC did not have the acclaim that it does, when Lucas went there and Caleb Deschanel and Walter Murch and all these guys, like we said, we're working together 30, 40 years later. And so Milius, John Milius wrote Conan and all kinds of stuff. So I highly suggest, Maddie, that you guys check this out, because it talks also mm-hmm. about what USC originally was, how it was just, like you're saying, small groups, that it literally was just a group of a few students. And so that's why they were able to like write each other's features and do this and do that. So so yeah, USC definitely has that steeped history. Yeah, I think, let me just check here. I don't think there's anything else other than every time I have a guest on, I give them the chance. If they have a, it's open floor, if there's anything you'd like to say or social media you'd like to plug, feel free, the floor is yours.
Okay. So yeah, my social media is Madison Campioni. It's my Facebook, my director's page, so you can follow me there or message me if you want to get in contact with me. I also have a Instagram account that I don't really use that frequently, but I do have it. It's Madison Campioni again. And thank you so much, Paul. This was really great interview. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. You know, we the only goal we have is that the – well, we have lots of goals, but the main goal we have is that the guest doesn't hang up and say, oh, God, why did I talk to him? And so thank you very much for that compliment. And you know, through the stuff outside of this show and with your dad, that we will be in touch more. I look forward to meeting you. We've had great emails and phone calls, so – that will be exciting. So yeah, you have a wonderful day and, enjoy going back to the basement.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye. Take care and aloha to you, Maddie. Excellent. That was so awesome. It's Happy Aloha Friday. This was episode number 5 of the Female Filmmaker Fridays. Madison Campione, USC Film School student. Keep an eye on her. She directs beyond amazing for a 21-year-old. And I'm not labeling her. I'm just saying the reality is she's that age. So, you know me. whether it's morning, afternoon, or night, make sure and watch a good movie. Take care and peace and aloha from all of us at Talking Pictures.